I believe that it's necessary for the humanity of that person to be absolutely removed from the mind of the person who is doing the killing in order for that killing to take place.
My time is done, as well as that of many others with whom I serve. We have all faced death here without reason or justification.
They talk about Al-Qaeda being in 60 or 80 different countries. Iraq really wasn't one of them. But now, with this war, they have opened Iraq up for Al-Qaeda operations. It's a really great achievement in the war on terrorism.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch from Monday, September 15th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The chief UN envoy to the Middle East declared today that the Israeli-Palestinian peace process is broken down and said he fears even worse bloodletting lies ahead. Tears Rode Larson, UN Middle East envoy, told the Security Council the recent cycle of terror attacks and extrajudicial killings has broken the Palestinian ceasefire and brought the process to a standstill. But he warned, while the situation is grave, it is alarmist to speak of the demise of the peace process. The Palestinians are urging the UN to demand that Israel ensures Yasser Arafat's safety, and key Security Council members are urging both parties to implement the peace plan known as the roadmap. Secretary of State Colin Powell visited a mass grave today to highlight perhaps the single biggest human rights abuse of Saddam Hussein's brutal regime, the chemical weapons murder of 5,000 people in March 1988. Powell flew here from Baghdad to take part in the formal dedication of a memorial and museum to commemorate those who lost their lives there 15 years ago. The Halabja massacre has been cited repeatedly by President Bush as an example of Saddam Hussein's brutality. It was there that Saddam took revenge on the population for its perceived backing of Iran during the Iran-Iraq War, bombing them with deadly gas. Many of those attending the ceremony lost 7 to 10 family members in the slaughter. Powell stood before long rows of simple headstones where the remains of more than 1,000 victims of the conquered regime now lie. He told the gathering of several hundred, "I can't tell you that Saddam Hussein was a murderous tyrant. You know that. What I can tell you is that what happened here in 1988 is never going to happen again." The secretary's trip comes at a time when polls indicate support for the administration's Iraq policies are slipping. 1 week after President Bush delivered a Sunday evening address to the nation requesting $87 billion more for the occupation of Iraq, Americans are reportedly growing anxious and looking for an exit strategy. A Washington Post ABC News poll finds that now 46% disapprove of Bush's policies. That's a 9-point jump in 3 weeks. Some analysts say it explains the rare televised appearance yesterday of Vice President Dick Cheney, who appeared on the Sunday morning talk show Meet the Press. Rahul Mahajan, the author of Full Spectrum Dominance and an analyst of Middle Eastern affairs, is among those who regard this as a marketing campaign on the part of the administration.
Well, let's remember this is a very, very marketing-driven administration. It's unabashed about being an administration of CEOs that runs itself like a business. And last year, in August of 2002, when there was all of this talk about what's the administration's policy and why haven't they made the case for the war, again, you saw the emergence of a new marketing strategy in late August when, once again, Dick Cheney came out and made a speech proclaiming that it was the case for the war, where, of course, there was nothing new. And Andrew Carr, the White House chief of staff, when asked later, why didn't you guys start, tell us what was going on when there was all this discussion, he said, well, it's basic marketing strategy. You don't launch a new product before Labor Day.
So it's after Labor Day now.
That's right.
So is the administration launching a new product or just repackaging the old product?
Well, it's a new product in the sense of a new attempt to sell something to the American people. But honestly, if you look at what Bush's various aides are saying, there is absolutely nothing new. Dick Cheney on Meet the Press actually resurrected the hoary old story of claims of a meeting between Mohammed Atta, one of the 9/11 hijackers, and an agent of Iraqi intelligence in Prague, which was discredited long ago.
Is there some sentiment, however, throughout Iraq that perhaps the U.S. have actually liberated them from the likes of Saddam Hussein?
Iraqis are very happy that the Saddam Hussein government is gone. And yet many of those who were most jubilant right afterwards are now thinking that in some ways, actually, they may even have been better off under Saddam Hussein. It was a very repressive government, but it was also one in which there was stability. Right now, estimates are that between various criminal attacks and U.S. Military attacks, something like 1,000 Iraqis a week may be dying. Furthermore, in Saddam's era, even though they were under very harsh sanctions, attempts were made to provide basic services to keep electricity and water running, and the United States has done virtually nothing. I mean, to this day, they have not restored the pre-war level of services in those areas.
Colin Powell was in Iraq over the weekend and was critical of opponents of the administration's policy. Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of War, was also in Iraq recently in what could only be characterized as a public relations campaign. And so they're painting quite a different picture from other realities that we're hearing in progressive reports. How is it that the administration is able to do this and get away with it, seemingly?
Powell is actually applying the persistent maxim of the administration that the best defense is a good offense, and is actually going and attacking everybody else in the world for not, quote, doing something about Iraq before, and thus, by extension, seeming to indicate that anything the United States does now is perfectly justifiable. And the answer is very simple. If you look at the record, these guys don't feel in the slightest way bound by the truth. I mean, there is not a single administration official who has not repeatedly lied when it comes to Iraq, and in fact, there's a number of lies on ancillary areas as well. And at this point, I think, honestly, you can't take anything they say seriously. I think they have completely compromised their credibility with those people who are actually watching the news and trying to compare their statements with what comes out later. I think they're relying very cynically on the fact that most Americans are not going to do that.
Vice President Dick Cheney said yesterday he does not know when the U.S. military presence in Iraq will actually end, and he hinted that the Bush administration would seek more money on top of the $87 billion already requested to cover U.S. costs there. Asked if that would be the last such request from the administration, Cheney replied, quote, "I can't say that. It's all we think we'll need for the foreseeable future for this year," unquote. What's your response to that?
Well, again, you know, even if he had said the opposite, there would have been no reason to believe it. It all depends on what happens. If the Iraqis continue to resist, if the resistance isn't simply beaten down by force, which is what the United States is trying to do, then, of course, the costs are going to mount further, without a doubt.
How strong is the resistance at this point, and who do you think is responsible for this resistance? Are they the Iraqi people? Are they the Saddam loyalists? Are they factions from throughout Iraq between the different Muslim factors and other warring factors?
At this point, anything said about the Iraqi resistance is speculation, but I'll speculate and say this. Its strength is unclear in military terms, but is absolutely growing day by day in terms of popular support. I mean, I think we need to include the various forms of nonviolent resistance to the American occupation as well. The Bush administration discounts them, but they really exist. Mass demonstrations, new civil society organizing against the occupation. There's a very large climate of support for any kind of resistance. The components of that resistance, again, it's speculation, but it seems pretty clear it's not just the so-called Ba'athist dead-enders that administration officials like to talk about. There are also just ordinary people who are increasingly upset because of the atrocities of the occupation, the numerous occasions on which crowds of peaceful demonstrators have been killed. These are the kinds of things that do set people on the path of armed resistance. And there's also, of course, you know, Iraq was one of the very few countries where you could almost definitively say there is really no significant al-Qaeda presence. You know, they talk about al-Qaeda being in 60 or 80 different countries. Iraq really wasn't one of them. But now, with this war, they have opened Iraq up for al-Qaeda operations. It's a really great achievement in the war on terrorism.
Well, in fact, Vice President Cheney said that there's new evidence that links al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden to Iraq. He says Iraq was the geographic base for the perpetrators of 9/11.
Yeah, it's a fascinating revision of history. And when he's saying this, I wonder why he isn't making an apology to the people of Afghanistan, when we were told all along that Afghanistan was the geographical base. This is just, you know, take a whole bunch of words, pick them at random, and throw them out there and think that people will believe anything you have to say.
Secretary of State Colin Powell met with four of the permanent members of the UN Security Council in Geneva before going to Iraq to gain support for a UN resolution to establish an international force in Iraq. It was thought that France might actually veto any resolution that would fail to mandate that the Iraqi Governing Council report directly to the UN. That appears now not to be the case. If France goes along with the resolution in its present form, how will that impact the affairs there in Iraq, in your opinion?
Well, perhaps the worst thing about it, the resolution in the form that the United States has proposed it, is that it basically contains a de facto recognition of the so-called Governing Council as a legitimate government or as a legitimate interim government, when in actuality it's something that was simply put together by the U.S. military occupation authorities and has virtually no legitimacy in the country. Other problems are the fact that it's really giving the United States retroactively some legitimacy for the occupation itself when it went to war in blatant violation of the U.N. Charter. And it will be a real blow for any concept of international law or for the authority of the UN over any country.
Mm. And amid growing demands from activists and others, families of servicemen and women here in the U.S. for immediate withdrawal of the U.S. troops, Powell said that withdrawing the troops would be premature because Iraqis are not ready to govern themselves. Is there any truth in that statement, in your opinion?
Well, Iraqis are not going to be made more ready to govern themselves by being repeatedly shot at, which is a lot of what the occupation forces are doing. It's very untrue if you talk about the Iraqi population. In fact, what we've seen since the end of Saddam's regime is a desperate thirst and hunger for democracy and freedom of expression in Iraq, and right now the main obstacle to that is the Coalition Provisional Authority. You know, there's over 100 new publications in Iraq, but it's the CPA which has promulgated a new version of press censorship under which there are 9 different reasons for which they can shut down a publication. What is true is that Iraq is right now being run by, in addition to the CPA, different armed camps. So, for example, there are several Shia organizations which really control certain parts. There are Kurdish organizations which control other parts. And it's important that the general public in Iraq not be left to the mercy of the accommodations that these different forces may make by themselves.
Finally, what, in your opinion, Dr. Mahajan, needs to be done to, is there an exit strategy or plan that the administration needs to be developing at this time, and what might it include?
The United States doesn't have an exit strategy. Let's remember, since the Gulf War, there's been a continuous land-based U.S. presence in the Gulf. This was a matter of design. The war against Iraq and the occupation of Iraq is also a matter of design. The United States wants to keep a permanent military presence there in order to have leverage over Iraq's oil and to have leverage over other countries in the region. So they don't even want to exit right now unless the costs are made simply too high for them. And that, I think, is what really needs to be considered when people talk about exit strategies. The United States doesn't want to do it.
Mm. Any final thoughts on your part, Dr. Mahajan?
We've seen this over and over again. We've seen multiple waves of the administration sort of letting protest and dissent build up and then coming out with a new marketing campaign, a new advertising campaign to sort of quell things. And they never have anything new to say. They never justify themselves. It's always, I have a fervent belief that I believe the Iraqis will greet us as liberators. They're saying the exact same thing now they said before the war. And it's really up to us not to be taken in once again.
Rahul Mahajan, the author of Full Spectrum Dominance and an analyst of Middle Eastern affairs. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. It's your financial support that makes this show possible. So if you're finding yourself informed, we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at www.pacifica.org. That's www.pacifica.org. As President Bush asked for $87 billion last week to continue to fund the U.S. occupation in Iraq, he lauded the increasingly frustrated U.S. troops who are serving there and read a letter from what he called the front lines of freedom. In the letter, the soldier apparently wrote about his pride in serving a just cause and about the deep desire for Iraqis for freedom. "I see it," he said, "in the eyes of a hungry people every day here. They are starved for freedom and opportunity." Well, today on Peace Watch, we bring you an alternative viewpoint from the front lines of freedom. Tim Predmore is on active duty with the 101st Airborne Division near Mosul, Iraq. He has been in Iraq since March and in the military for about 5 years. On August 24th, the Peoria Journal-Star, the newspaper from his hometown in Illinois, published an editorial by him entitled, "A U.S. Soldier in Iraq Wonders How Many More Must Die." Sonali Kolhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles tried unsuccessfully to reach Predmore by phone, so with the help of KPFK's Rick Allen, she recorded his editorial and added a few choice words from U.S. heads of state for illustration.
President George Bush said Thursday night, "Saddam Hussein's Iraqi regime is a direct threat, not only to this country, but to free people everywhere, and must be dealt with."
If the world fails to confront the threat posed by the Iraqi regime, refusing to use force, even as a last resort, free nations would assume immense and unacceptable risks.
The president said he and the entire nation are grateful to those who serve in uniform.
"We appreciate your commitment, your idealism, and your sacrifice. We support you. And we know that if peace must be defended, you are ready."
Shock and awe were the words used to describe the awesome display of power the world has come to view upon the start of Operation Iraqi Freedom. It was to be an up-close, dramatic display of military strength and advanced technology within the arsenal of the United States and the United Kingdom's military. But as a soldier preparing for the invasion of Iraq, the words shock and awe rang deeper within my psyche.
"Another aspect of effects-based planning," Colonel Crowder says, "is to consider what's referred to as the shock and awe factor on the enemy of an intensive air campaign."
"The effects that we are trying to create is to make it so apparent and so overwhelming at the very outset of potential military operations that the adversary quickly realizes that there is no real alternative here other than to fight and die or to give up." And so they really are trying to kind of ensure that everybody in Iraq understands what's coming.
These two great superpowers were about to break the very rules they demand of others. Without the consent of the United Nations and ignoring the pleas of their own citizens, the United States and Britain invaded Iraq. Shock and awe? Yes, the words correctly describe the emotional impact I felt as we prepared to participate in what I believed not to be an act of justice, but of hypocrisy.
"Not only do we support those brave souls who were sacrificing on our behalf, but we want to thank their parents and their families for their dedication as well. All of us involved here in Washington are extremely proud of the skill and bravery of our young Americans who are willing to sacrifice for something greater than themselves."
From the moment the first shot was fired in the so-called War of Liberation and Freedom, hypocrisy reigned. Following the broadcasting of recorded images of captured and dead U.S. soldiers over Arab television, American and British leaders vowed revenge while verbally assaulting the networks for displaying such vivid images. Yet within hours of the deaths of Saddam's two sons, the American government released horrific photos of the two dead brothers for the entire world to view. Again, a do-as-we-say and not-as-we-do scenario. Soldiers serving in Iraq, we have been told that our purpose here is to help the people of Iraq by providing them the necessary assistance, militarily as well as in humanitarian effort. Then tell me where the humanity was in the recent Stars and Stripes account of two young children brought to a U.S. military camp by their mother in search of medical care. The two children had been, unbeknown to them, playing with explosive ordnance they had found and, as a result, were severely burned. The account tells how the two children, following an hour-long wait, were denied care by two U.S. military doctors. The soldier described the incidents as one of many atrocities he had witnessed on the part of the U.S. military.
The citizens of Iraq are coming to know what kind of people we have sent to liberate them. American forces and our allies are treating innocent civilians with kindness. The people of the United States are proud of the honorable conduct of our military.
Skin. Good doctors never leave a scar. No proof again. I'll take the med, you take the blood. It's all the same to the world dreamer. It's all the same in the end.
So then, what is our purpose here? Was this invasion due to weapons of mass destruction, as we have so often heard? If so, where are they?
We have made progress.
Did we invade to dispose of a leader and his regime on the account of close association with Osama bin Laden? If so, where is the proof?
Steady progress.
Or is it that our incursion is a result of our own economic advantage?
In restoring hope in a nation beaten down by decades of tyranny.
Iraq's oil can be refined at the lowest cost of any in the world. Coincidence? This looks like a modern-day crusade, not to free an oppressed people or to rid the world of a demonic dictator relentless in his pursuit of conquest and domination, but a crusade to control another nation's natural resource. At least for us here, oil seems to be the reason for our presence.
Do not follow orders to destroy any more of Iraq's oil wells. Those who carry out such orders will be found and will be punished.
There is only one truth, and it is that Americans are dying there. There are an estimated 10 to 14 attacks on our servicemen and women daily in Iraq. As the body count continues to grow, it would appear that there is no immediate end in sight.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
I once believed that I served for a cause. To uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. Now, I no longer believe. I have lost my conviction, my determination. I can no longer justify my service for what I believe to be half-truths and bold lies. My time is done, as well as that of many others with whom I serve. We have all faced death here without reason or justification. How many more must die? How many more tears must be shed before America awakens and demands a return of the men and women whose job it is to protect them rather than their leaders' interest?
Looks like America's dropped a load. Like she was ready to explode. I could not see her from up here.
Tim Predmore is on active duty with the 101st Airborne Division near Mosul, Iraq. A 1985 Richwoods High School graduate and native Peorian, he has been in Iraq since March and in the military for about 5 years.
Looks like America was trapped alone. She tried to call me on the telephone.
The music is by the group Live from their Secret Samadhi album, the words of active duty soldier Tim Predmore. They were read by Rick Allen and mixed by Sonali Kolhatkar of Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. Thanks also to Fidel Rodriguez for production assistance with that piece.
This is Anthony Sloan, a.k.a. T, from the Pattersons Taking a Train to Tibet, the engineer and sometimes sound gatherer for Pacifica's Peace Watch. I do hope you are being informed by our efforts here. If you find what we do valuable, please make a financial commitment to Peace Watch so we may continue our work on your behalf. Kindly make a secure online pledge by visiting our website at pacifica.org. That's pacifica.org. Or you may send us a tax-exempt donation via check or money order addressed to Peace Watch, care of Pacifica, 2390, that's 2390, Champlain, Champlain, Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. Thank you so much for your support, and I'll see you on the front lines. Peace.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you.